Hey, Harpy Hour fans. There's a new way to earn yourselves a coveted Harpy Hour logo sticker and get a shout out from us in an episode.
Just tag us at Harpy Hour Pod on an original social media post. So not a retweet, but something you wrote yourself telling your friends how much you love us.
Next, DM us your mailing address straight from your social media account or email us along with a screenshot of your post to harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com.
You won't get another sticker if you already got one in our last giveaway, but let your friends know anyways so they can participate and get a matching sticker.
We're only giving away up to 20 stickers, but if you miss out, you can also get one by supporting us on Patreon.
Now, before you enjoy the episode, check out this promo from another awesome podcast to add to your list and stick around for Harpy Hour.
Hey guys, this is Ben.
And I'm Karen.
All you do is read about crime.
If you have serial killer posters in your bedroom.
If you're hiding newspaper article clippings under your bed. Looking at you, Karen.
Don't be concerned. We share your compulsion.
Join us, Ben and Karen, husband and wife team, as we delve deeper into the mind of serial killers.
Dive into the darker side of humanity, but from the safety of your own couch. You can find our website,
crimeandcompulsion.com.
Find us on Facebook,
Crime and Compulsion.
Find us on Instagram,
Crime and Compulsion Podcast.
Find us on Twitter,
at Crime Compulsion. Find our episodes wherever you get your favorite podcast streaming from.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour.
The harpiest of all the hours.
Welcome.
Hello. Harpy Hour? Harpy Hour question mark?
I'm Tracy. You know what we're doing, Tracy. You know what we're doing.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph.
And this is our podcast where we share ridiculous stories in history, science, and entertainment.
And question what we're doing, apparently.
I mean, that's pretty normal.
It's only been 66 episodes.
Damn, 66.
Yeah, we're getting there.
We're getting old.
I mean, yeah, aging's hard, guys.
We're doing it very gracefully.
You know what? I want to shout out the actress who plays Detective Rollins on SVU, because it's her birthday as we record this. And
Listening?
And I'm putting it into the universe that she's listening. So happy birthday, Kelly Giddish. I appreciate you.
I feel like it's very interesting that you choose her of all people to acknowledge. Like, I feel like every time we record, it's probably some famous person's birthday.
It's a celebrity's birthday every day and probably a more famous person.
Yeah, but I saw the thing today. So happy circumstance. Happenstance, okay. One might say.
Just like of all the celebrities, of all the people we could ever choose to acknowledge on their birthday.
If you guys want to bring a celebrity to the table, that's fine. But
yeah, it's Sarah Michelle Gellar's birthday.
I mean, I already said you guys need to work on getting us
the
Oprah.
Vampire Slayer.
Oprah. Somebody get us Oprah.
Okay, great. If they're not,
that's
Oprah
how we
level,
shoot to number one in one day. Gwyneth Paltrow did it.
Gwyneth Paltrow is also Gwyneth Paltrow.
Did you guys see the SNL skit with the iceberg?
No, I did not.
Yes, I shared it. I fully enjoy the iceberg.
Yeah, he was like, Colin, you were supposed to be my Oprah. He was like,
I'm here to talk about my
Colin
album.
Colin Jost was interviewing him, the iceberg, and he was like,
the iceberg that sunk the Titanic.
You told me that you were going to be my Oprah. And he was like, I didn't say that. And he's like, well, somebody did. Like, my publicist.
I'm not here to talk about the Titanic. Like, that's in the past. We moved past it. Who cares if, like, 30 people died? Well, it was... that's... Who cares?
Why are you attacking me?
Why? I'm here to talk about my album. It's called Music.
It's called Music?
You have to watch this again. It's so good.
I will.
Anyway,
so guys, let me ask you, what is your definition of the word doughy?
Doughy.
Like sort of like soft, maybe squishy, but like soft.
To describe a person.
Yeah, like pillowy, like kind of chubby.
Like, thank you.
Pillsbury Doughboy.
Thank you. That is an example I gave.
Steph, when she was a baby.
I was beyond doughy.
Yeah.
Michelin Man is beyond doughy.
Yeah.
I was on the couch the other day after like I did four night shifts in a row. I was exhausted. I was laying on Eric's couch and he comes next to me and he pushes like he with one finger kind of squishes my stomach and he's like, "You're doughy." I'm like, "Excuse me?"
No, no, you can't say that.
You are sleeping on the couch tonight.
I know. You are sleeping on this couch. No, he's like, "No, you're like, your skin's really soft. You have nice curves. Like, you're doughy." I'm like, "That is not what doughy means."
No.
That is not the definition of doughy.
With the soft skin, I was thinking, was he trying to say dewy?
No, it doesn't sound like that's what he was saying.
But then he threw in curves, and that is not dewy.
But he's like, "No, like, I like your body." Like, he's like digging a hole. He's like, "Oh, I mean, like, you don't have like rock hard abs, but you're like, you know, you've got a good shape and you're soft. I like it."
Nope.
I'm like,
"Nope."
No. Put the shovel down.
No.
I'm just like, is he new?
Like.
And he's like, I'm like, doughy means
maybe
like
that's
chubby.
A compliment in France.
I don't know. I'm like, doughy means like chubby, like a little fluffy, you know, like love handle.
No,
like that's what
pillowy. Like,
yeah. I'm like the Pillsbury Doughboy. He's like, "No, that's not what it means." He's like,
"Yes, it
does." He's all like indignant. He's like, "No, I'm gonna look on Urban Dictionary." And he opens up Urban Dictionary and he just like gets quiet and he looks at me. He's like, "Well."
Yeah.
This is after, mind you, that he looked at me and he's like, again, four night shifts in a row. This is after my fourth night shift. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm laying on his couch and he's like, "You look tired." I'm like, "Thanks." He's like, "You have bags under your eyes." I'm like, "Fuck you today."
Your eyes are all bloodshot. You're on pot, aren't you?
Send him back to France.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, "Thanks." Like, "No, it's a compliment." I'm like, "No.
It's not."
No.
No. Why would you think
that? I don't think that means what you think it means.
Oh, honey.
Oh.
What a dumbass.
Yeah. I mean, I love him. He meant well, but he just kept picking up the shovel.
Yeah.
Put it down. Put it down. Anyway. I wanted to get a poll of people's definition of the word doughy.
Yeah, he's wrong.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
It's something cute you say to a 6-month-old.
Yes.
Is
maybe.
It?
Maybe. I said maybe.
Like, I mean, is
the 6-month-old doesn't understand, so it's fine.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, Steph, in addition to harping on your boyfriend's poor performance
body.
There.
Yeah.
Yes.
What else are you going to harp on today?
Today, I'm going to share with you guys a little ditty about Ron and Dorinda.
Jack and Diane.
I don't.
I like Jack.
I don't know
Diane.
What's happening here. I don't know. What's
about
what's
who?
Happening? Rob
Ron
and Dorinda?
And Dorinda.
Ron and Dorinda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. There's a song.
Yeah, but no, and I'm gonna have that song stuck in my head.
I mean, I don't
know the original.
Song, so
you know the song, Jack and Diane?
You don't know Jack and Diane?
Oh no, yeah, life goes on.
Oh, long after the thrill of living is gone.
The beginning of that song is little ditty about Jack and Diane.
I did not know the intro of that.
Two American kids growing up in the heartland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no. I didn't know the intro. Now I do.
I am
Jackie
very
wants
surprised
to be a football star.
That Tracy did not know a pop culture reference that I did.
I know. This is a red
letter day.
What is
this world? What is happening?
She was spending too much time with Broadway to
on Kelly Giddish's birthday of all days. That's how I'll remember this day.
Can we tag her when we post this episode? Maybe that'll gain us some followers.
We're gonna tag her.
Maybe that'll help us in some way.
Okay, let's do this.
This topic was suggested to me by my friend Catherine, who recently started listening. And
who also owes us $20 a month on Patreon.
Yeah, Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine. Get your shit together, Catherine.
Money. So Catherine's husband, side note, for some reason keeps forgetting that we're harpies, and instead for some reason keeps calling us mavens. No. Apparently.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say herpes.
No, not herpes. Maven.
Think of the word.
And I'm like, what the maven. Hell is a maven? So Catherine and I looked it up because he keeps asking her, like, oh, are you listening to the mavens again?
I think he's trying to say raven, but that's maybe not he what said he's maven. Saying. Well, and maven is like, go ahead.
According to Merriam-Webster, it is one who is experienced or knowledgeable.
Yeah,
expert. It's
like,
so, also,
yeah, like an expert.
Also, freak.
Oh. Didn't know that part.
Didn't know that part either. So we are mavens now.
Okay.
Welcome to Maven Hour.
Okay.
No, it doesn't have the same ring.
Maven Minute.
Maven. No, it's several minutes. We're already several minutes in.
That's fair.
All right, so let's hear about Ron and Dorinda.
Okay.
Once upon a time, long ago in the faraway kingdom of California.
Is it the land of bread and cheese?
I wish.
Oh, I miss the land of bread and cheese. Let's go there.
There was a damsel named Samantha Dorinda Maloney Figler McPherson Lopez.
Nope, you get you get two, maybe three names. No. Sorry.
You lost me at Baloney.
Maloney. Or Malone? Maloney? I don't know.
Okay.
Malone?
Could go either way.
Oh.
Like post Malone?
I don't know.
Okay. Continue.
I did not look up pronunciation. And this damsel was in distress.
Okay.
That's because she was arrested.
She had 80 million names.
She was arrested in 1982 and sentenced to 50 years in prison.
Oh, what'd she do?
All right, I can't keep up with this.
No, please stop.
No, I'm going to stop. We're just going to pick it up in my normal voice.
Okay, great.
She had so many names because she was married three times. And instead of replacing her acquired married name, I guess she just added.
I feel like as husband number three, I'd be
I would be like, I don't care if you keep your maiden name, but like, let's no, thank you.
Who are these other guys? Do you talk to them still? Like, what's happening?
Yeah. No, thank you.
I know there's a lot of paperwork involved with changing your name. Like, is it harder to remove a name than to just add a name?
Well, yeah, it's the same process.
Does she have kids with these other people? Maybe she wants to keep.
But I mean, if she's going through the process to change her name, why not?
Yeah, you might as well just change it back. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
I'm just thinking if she had kids that had those names that she might want to.
She does have kids. I don't remember which husband it's
from
with.
All of them.
No, I don't think it's with all of them. I don't know. But she keeps collecting names. It's her thing. It's what she does.
All right.
It's not the point of the story. Dorinda had a talent for attracting men, obviously, as we've already seen.
Why did she go by that name? Wasn't her first name Samantha?
And yeah, I don't know. I guess she likes Dorinda better. Okay. We'll go
by their middle name. It's more unique.
Yeah.
When you have eight names, why would you just choose Samantha?
Yeah, right? You've got options. You just get to pick. She had a talent for attracting men and making them do whatever she wants.
Nice.
She was attractive, curvaceous, maybe doughy.
Doughy.
One might say doughy.
One might say that one is Eric. And somehow she fell into a life of crime.
Sure. So,
Steph, when I see you at Tracy's wedding, I'm going to tell you that you look really doughy.
Oh, you're looking
dress.
So doughy today. Got that dough glow going on.
That dough glow.
The only time it's acceptable to tell me that is after I've eaten an entire pizza.
Yeah.
You got that dough glow, girl.
Yeah. Literally full of dough.
Yeah.
Dorinda falls into a life of crime.
Sure.
In 1970, she went to a store, the same store, over and over again, and repeatedly got caught shoplifting. But every single time, every single time she managed to talk the like store owner, the manager, whoever, out of like actually prosecuting her. And she just kept going back and shoplifting to the same place over and over again. And finally, they're like, fuck it. No, we are prosecuting you. So they took her to court.
That's just dumb.
It was just like their thing. Like, oh, this is just our thing. We play this little game.
No, go to a different store.
She's so like beautiful and charismatic that they're just like, all right. She talked her way out of it. And finally, they were like, no, fuck this. So they took her to court.
That's stupid.
She won. Then
how?
She turned around and sued them for malicious prosecution and won $2,500.
That's impressive.
This is why do I follow the rules?
Teach me your ways, Dorinda.
why do I follow any rules ever?
Right.
Like, there is no incentive. Like,
she graduated from shoplifting to forging checks. Again, got caught. I mean,
growing as a person. That's good. Mm-hmm.
Personal growth, climbing that ladder.
Yeah.
She got caught, was brought to prison. She had an affair with her attorney who was married, and somehow that helped her get released from prison early, I think.
No, you don't sleep with the attorney. You sleep with the judge or the warden, you know.
Well, I guess it like sort of jeopardized the credibility of their case or
she's
something.
She's just like indiscriminate about.
There was not much detail on that. Just said she had an affair with her attorney and got released early. I'm like, huh.
Okay. Maybe it was like a court appointed attorney or something. And they were like, oh, like that shouldn't have happened.
Unclear.
Okay.
No further details. But as soon as she got out and she's on parole, she started writing more bad checks and eluded police. And she would actually call the Cobb County Sheriff's Office to like taunt them to be like, haha, I'm free. You don't know where
that's
I am.
That's just asking to be reincarcerated.
Yeah, no, she's got some cojones. Yeah.
Did I miss when is this?
So 1970s was shoplifting. Okay. So we're somehow, the checks were sometime in the 1970s. Yeah.
Oh, we're still in the 70s. Okay.
In 1981, she graduated to bank robbery.
Sure. I mean, next logical step.
She's got goals.
She's escalating. Yeah. She's climbing the ladder, like I said. She convinced her husband, then husband at the time, Carl Lopez.
I was going to say, which one?
According to her names, that is the last one here.
Okay.
Because it's Dorinda Malone or Maloney, which I assume is her brain name. Beaker, okay. McPherson, Lopez. So the last one in the line here, Lopez. She convinces Lopez.
Okay, so the current one.
Not her final husband. Spoilers. She convinces him to help her rob a bank, along with three of his friends. So what she would do is she would call the bank, posing as an IRS employee, and get the bank manager's home address. And then her men, meaning her husband and his friends, would break into the manager's home, hold him and his family hostage. I'm saying him because I'm assuming in the 1980s it was a man.
Yeah, probably.
Right. And then the manager would go and empty the bank vault for them. And then eventually she got caught doing this too. Unclear how many times she got away with this before it happened, but it sounds like more than once.
Okay, great.
Wow.
At trial, one of her accomplices, not her husband, but one of the other accomplices, confessed his love to her on the stand and said, yes, I would lie for her.
Jesus, this woman.
Do we have pics of her?
Yeah, he's like, yes, I would lie for her. I'm like, you are on trial already. Like, save yourself. It's over. She doesn't love you.
No.
So Dorinda is brought to federal prison.
Okay.
A prison called Pleasanton Federal Prison in California, which was nicknamed Club Fed.
Yeah.
Club
Kind of sounds like Club Fed.
Well, I'm thinking Club Fed after like Club Med, which is a...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not funny if you have to explain it, Steph.
Well, Liz was doing club like club music, which is not what we're talking about here.
It sounded like a swanky, not very intimidating federal prison.
I mean,
well,
I think that's
funny you should
entirely
say that.
Correct.
That is exactly what it is. Prison is probably not the right word for what this place was. Maybe like resort is a better term, like exclusive resort.
Ankle monitor resort.
This resort slash prison had many amenities such as tennis courts, weight rooms, racquetball courts, soda machines, pool tables. They got regular china at dinner, which I guess instead of those like styrofoam trays that they probably
otherwise get.
That's the most
egregious of all of this.
Air conditioning, private rooms, TV. What? They were allowed to have like boom boxes and play whatever music they want all over the place.
Yeah, this definitely sounds like...
It was pretty nice by prison
standards.
Sounds
like a sorority house.
Right? Doesn't sound like prison.
Yeah. Oh, which is like a federal house mom.
Yes, exactly. This was a minimum security prison, I believe.
Okay.
So Dorinda gets there. She takes a job at the kitchen making 21 cents an hour, which is 58 cents an hour today. So not great still.
Yeah, still.
Is that how
wages,
poorly prisoners are paid?
Yes.
Jeez.
That's correct.
Oof. Her plan was, I just want to work so hard that I get really tired and just like pass out hard at night. Like, I'm going to get a job where I can just work really hard.
Okay.
And during one of her first shifts, she's in the kitchen. I don't know what she's doing. She's putting trays together, cleaning some dishes. I don't know. Doing her normal thing in the kitchen. And then all of a sudden, a naked couple mid-bone sesh, mid-thrust, fall through the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
And land on the food manager's desk.
I mean,
this is in the prison?
This is in the prison.
Okay. And these
fully
two prisoners?
Nude.
And there's fully a couple. Boning.
There, yep.
Is it a guard and a person?
Or two prisoners?
Oh, did I fail to mention that Club Med was also co-ed?
I was going to ask that earlier, and mm-hmm. I was like, no, that's a stupid question. It couldn't possibly be.
Oh, it was. Okay, it was great. Co-ed.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And apparently, the kitchen ceiling was a popular fucking spot, but eventually that...
It can only take so much.
Yeah.
It
wore out. Mm-hmm. So prisoners were frequently found fucking all over the place at this prison. Broom closets, crawl spaces. They would allegedly cut holes in the crotch of their pants and then just like be seen on the field, like standing suspiciously close to each other for a little bit.
Okay.
You got to do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, is that even enjoyable? Like,
maybe part of the joy is just
The secret,
the risk, the secrecy, we're sticking it to the man as well as each other kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, the secret meetups and the risk.
I mean, I'm sure someone was probably enjoying it. I don't know.
I just feel like they're probably not moving that much to not draw attention to themselves. It's just like one person standing there and then the other one just like slips it in and then is like, peace out.
The men probably enjoyed it at least.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
I can't speak to... I have no, reports from that time of the people who were doing the fucking as to how adequate it was.
How it was going. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes people would just go at it in the open, but they would have someone kind of, spotting for them, standing guard. This was a practice called pinning.
Team effort.
You would pin for somebody by standing guard for them.
Okay.
Dorinda had a few boyfriends at the time. Sure. But she called them walkies. They were walkie boyfriends because all
they
she did
was walk up and stick it in and then walk away.
No,
I was thinking something along that line.
No, walkie boyfriends or walkie couples were couples who only held hands. Like they were a couple, I guess, more emotionally than physically, because holding hands was the only thing that was actually allowed physically between people, like between inmates. Mm-hmm. It was like in the elementary school relationship, like my fifth grade boyfriend and I were walkies, held hands and couple skated together,
You could show each other off by holding hands in the hallway.
Couple skated.
We couple skated at like someone's fifth grade, like roller skating birthday party to like some Backstreet Boys song or something or NSYNC.
Yes. 1,000%.
Mm-hmm. According to Dorinda, it wasn't go up on the roof serious. That's the standard.
Oh my god.
Younger women at the prison called her mama. They were like her little daughters or
don't like that
protégés.
How old is she at this point?
You know what, I didn't get her birthday. I think she was in her 20s. I think she's in her like mid to late 20s maybe.
So not a mama.
She's not like old. Yeah. I think she was in her 20s when she was maybe she's in her early 30s. So she's not old, though. Like, she's older, but not old.
Okay.
Older than the people she was a mama to. For example, she had one daughter named Shelly Bosch, who was 18 years old. Shelly was from Alaska, and she was in prison for 104 years for her role in a murder.
Oh.
She, like, distracted some, like, 63-year-old widow while these two other men clubbed her to death. No further details on why, but that was what Shelly was there for.
Okay.
So Dorinda was, after, being there for a few years, and she was maybe a little bit older than some of the other women, so she was like the mama.
Okay.
She later became an accounting clerk there, and also the head of the inmate council. The inmate council was like this group that took minor inmate grievances to the warden to be addressed. So like life for Dorinda at this point in time is about as cush as it can be when you're in prison.
Sure.
In 1985, so 4 years after, 3 years after Dorinda arrives, a 41-year-old inmate named Ron arrived at the prison from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Ron was described as porky and lovable.
Aww.
Doughy? Actually,
doughy. Oh, very
the,
doughy.
Yeah, the perfect companion to Doughy Dorinda. Oh.
Doughy Dorinda. Clocking in at over 200 pounds, and it was not muscle mass. So let's talk about Ron's history a little bit.
Okay.
How he ended up here. Ron had married a woman that he knew for 2 weeks in order to try to avoid going, like being drafted into the Vietnam War, but he got drafted anyway. He trained with helicopters and then was shipped to Nam, and he trained as a mechanic there, figuring that like my odds of surviving this war as a mechanic are probably better than as a pilot. But he did still end up doing like some pretty dangerous flights and stuff and got into some pretty dicey situations. He got a Bronze Star, though, was promoted to warrant officer and commanded 86 mechanics and 13 helicopters. So he did well in the military.
Yeah.
But then after he got out, he was kind of floundering a bit back in the States because he didn't have enough college credit to like start a solid like white collar career.
Okay.
So he, you know, he kind of jumped from like smaller job to smaller job, like JCPenney warehouse worker, carpet cleaner, things like that.
Yeah.
He had a wife and 2 kids. That wife, I think it's the same wife that he had known for 2 weeks before she became his wife. But he still, like, he wasn't happy. And he was particularly angry at, like, men who avoided the draft because they were able to, like, get ahead in their careers on the during the years that he was kind of stuck going to war, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those men probably all had heel spurs. So, I mean, everyone has their cross to bear. But, you know.
And angry because he didn't get away with it.
Right. Like, he couldn't. He failed at evading the draft and they did not. So, he's a little bitter. He then, though, became a white-collar criminal because in his mind, he's making up for the lost time from being stuck at war. So he's like, I gotta make up lost time, lost money.
Okay.
I'm gonna do some sketchy shit. Studied financial markets, got a job in commodities, unclear exactly what commodities, but he was in a commodities field. And he embezzled 130 grand from his clients at his brokerage in Seattle. Got caught, did 18 months in prison. While in prison, he made a friend named Michael Anthony, who was also a broker. And the two of them got out of prison together and went into the precious metals industry, started a business in that field. And together, they scammed 2,500 investors out of $18 million.
That's a good amount of money.
That's a pretty high margin.
Yeah. It's making up quite a bit of that lost time and then some.
Yeah.
They were caught, sent back to prison. So that's how he ended up at Pleasanton. And he was to serve a 3-year sentence starting in 1985.
For stealing that much money, he only got 3 years.
Well, in the 80s, like all these like minimum security prisons were
it's
just full of these.
Even more money in the 80s.
I know, but I'm saying in the 80s, these white collar criminals were just all they were doing was like short stints in minimum security prisons, then being let out and then doing it again, just like repeat, lather, rinse, repeat kind of thing.
Okay.
It's like all these white collar criminals were doing these like 18-month to 3-year stints for things like fraud and embezzlement and tax evasion, that kind of thing. So like that was Ron's beat. That's what he was doing.
Okay.
Bottom line is he had experience in the finance world and that led him to work beside Dorinda in prison because she was doing that accounting stuff.
Okay.
So he's working next to her. He's doing accounts receivable. I don't really know what that means. I've heard of that term before. It didn't seem interesting or relevant. So he did money stuff.
Receivable is what you're taking in. Payable is what you're putting out.
I just really like how prison systems use their inmates to run the prison.
Yes.
Right.
And then especially the ones that have a criminal record in that industry.
Well, clearly you were decent enough at this. Like,
Well, it's don't have to train you.
Shawshank Redemption. He did their taxes.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I did.
But that's not what he was in jail for. He wasn't in jail
That's true. He was in jail for murder.
Tax-related or financial crimes.
Right. But anyway, so he did money things. He's doing money things in prison. The end.
Okay.
So he took a shining to Dorinda because obviously she's got that doughy charm.
Because everyone does. Go ahead.
So just for like as an excuse to talk to her, he would constantly be asking her questions, like even stupid basic questions that he probably knew the answer to, just
he
for like an
dumb.
Excuse. Yeah, just... Exactly. Okay. He was playing dumb just to like as an excuse to talk to her.
Well, it's refreshing that it's him and not her.
Right. But finally, she just got like so fed up with his pestering that she turned to him one day and was like, you're either coming in second or you're trying to know me. If that's the case, we can talk after work. Coming in second. I like that.
Amazing.
So she's all business when she's at work, apparently.
Ah, gotcha.
Ron and Dorinda's first date was a movie. Just like,
ooh, with reminder, all the other
they're in prison.
Everybody else. Yeah.
They're in prison. And 2 weeks later, they had their first kiss when one of their friends was pinning for them.
Okay.
Aww. And from there, their relationship grew. They would go to movies together, church together. They went to dances. Dances? Like, what? There are prison dances.
Do they have Sadie Hawkins dances?
These guys have a better social life than we do.
I know.
And we are on the outside. This is ridiculous.
It's like a fucking country club over here.
It's better than that.
Dorinda called Ron Teddy Bear.
Gross.
And Ron called Dorinda my lady bear or Mrs. Bear. Gag.
This makes me want to die.
Yeah, it's awful. Ron was very protective of his lady bear. For example, when like a friend of Dorinda's like patted her on the butt once, Ron picked this guy up and like threw him against a wall. He's like, he needs to find a better way to say hello to you. So very protective of lady bear.
Okay.
In 1986, so this is a year after Ron got there, Dorinda's friend Shelley, the younger one, she broke out with two other inmates. And all they did to break out was like they cut a hole in the fence and just like ran through. So
that's not breaking out. That's
They just literally just cut a hole in the fence and like walked out, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Security increased a little bit after that. They did like barbed wire on the fences. They made a new alarm system. They planted a bunch of trees.
Oh, maybe the fence shouldn't be a suggestion. Like,
yeah, right. They planted a bunch of trees to prevent anyone escaping, like by an air escape.
It's not a great short-term solution, but go ahead.
And that's when a bunch of changes started happening at Pleasanton. So the inmate population in the 4 years that Dorinda had been there doubled from 300 to like over 600. So overcrowding of the prison led to fewer perks at Club Fed.
Okay.
So like they were no longer allowed to have cosmetics shipped in.
Oh no.
You're right. There weren't enough laundry machines for everybody. The inmate council for the minor grievances got disbanded, probably because there's too many people and too many grievances, I'm guessing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Quote, prison started to feel more like prison.
Oh no.
Oh, God forbid.
Okay, bro.
Dorinda claims that at this time, she started noticing discrepancies in office ledgers, like money was missing.
Okay.
So she suspected embezzlement.
Did she suspect her boyfriend?
No. Her teddy bear?
Actually, they didn't really talk a lot about their past to each other, about like what brought them to prison. They kind of like were a little vague about that. Yeah, they were a little vague about it. Yeah.
Okay.
But when she went up to the prison, this is her claim here. She says that she went up to the prison warden to tell him about this, and he asked her, how much longer do you have? She responded, I'm up for parole in 1991. He said, do you expect to be alive then? And she said, I do. And he said, accidents happen every day.
Oh, dear.
At the moment I was asked if I expected to be alive, I would be like, well, I was until you just asked me that.
Like,
accidents happen every day. This is a pretty cushy place. Like, were other inmates just dying?
Are you planning an accident? Like, I don't understand.
I mean, it was a threat, essentially. This is Dorinda's story.
Okay.
That night, her room was trashed. Her clothes were soaked in, like, shampoo, baby powder, and coffee grounds. And she says that since then, like after that, the guard started threatening her. She said that one told her, quote, if you don't stop making waves, you're going to drown. Another one, she says, put a box of razor blades in her room gave her a box of razor blades and implied that she should kill herself. Another one did the same thing with a Coke can full of broken glass. And she said another one threatened her with a switchblade. So they're all kind of like threatening
everybody's, her. Everybody's in on this.
She says
this
everyone's isn't threatening
like an
her.
Isolated.
No, she's saying that multiple guards are threatening her.
Yeah. Okay.
So whatever they're covering up is like widespread.
It sounds like it from what she's saying. Ron was very upset by all of this because he's very protective of his lady bear. But like he can't fight the guards, you know? So he became like so upset. He developed like bad anxiety. He ended up going to like the prison infirmary or whatever. And they prescribed him Ativan because he was so anxious all the time because he was just so upset on behalf of Lady Bear.
Okay.
In September of 86, Ron was notified that he was going to be transferred to an unfenced work camp. A while back, he had requested to be transferred here prior to his parole, and now they're saying that, you know, this is happening imminently.
Yeah.
Except now, supposedly, he didn't want to go because he was afraid.
He needed to stay behind to protect his lady bear.
Exactly. He has to protect her, his damsel in distress.
And they were only giving him this opportunity because they wanted to make her more vulnerable.
Well, he requested this opportunity a while back. I think it's kind of like a standard thing.
He's just getting it now. Suspicious.
Hadn't thought of that. So the day before his transfer, again, so all of this is from Dorinda's story, I should note. Okay. The day before, he told Dorinda that she should go outside to a specific location on the field every day between 10:45 and 11:30 a.m. He says that in his mind, if she's out there on that field, he'll know that she is safe. And she supposedly was like, I mean, I don't get it, but sure. Like, what else do I have to do anyway? I'll go sit on the field for 45 minutes.
Why 45 minutes?
10:30 to...
No, 10:45 to 11:30. I understand the math.
I
don't understand why.
Okay. What is significant about that time?
Yeah.
I don't know. On the day of his transfer, which was October 28th, 1986, he was given $11 and a Greyhound bus ticket. As a white-collar criminal, he was considered not to be a flight risk, so he was allowed to take the bus by himself to the work camp.
They shouldn't transport him.
Yeah. They're like, here's a bus ticket, here's $11, make your way to the camp.
Okay. The 80s were fucking wild, man.
That's some white-collar, white privilege. White-collar, white privilege right there.
Jesus.
Yeah. Godspeed. I hope you don't hit traffic.
You would think with how protective other privileged white people are of their money, they would take his crimes a bit more seriously.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
But would you believe it? He never arrived at camp.
Oh.
What a surprise and an unexpected consequence.
Right? He seems so honest and trustworthy in prison.
Right.
Dorinda was distraught when Ron was gone. She became quiet. She cried a lot. She even started going to work wearing sweatpants instead of her dress clothes because, you know, she was so depressed that she couldn't even like put on her nicer clothes. It's very unlike her.
Well, she's also being like trashed and threatened.
Yeah.
And has lost her only protection.
Right. Yeah. Allegedly.
I wouldn't want to, you know, attract attention to myself if I was being threatened and my only protection just left.
So that's the prison. That's Ron and Dorinda. Okay. We're gonna move a little bit forward in time, about a week. On November 5th, 1986, a man named Fred Holbrook was planning on a morning helicopter tour. He was a real estate developer, and he was planning to survey the land of the East Bay area for future property, whatever.
Development.
Sure.
Okay.
Fred Holbrook was a Vietnam War veteran pilot. Fred Holbrook also went by the name Ron McIntosh. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
So, Ron had a lot of money. There was a missing $1.7 million that was never recovered from his life of white-collar crime before he was arrested. So, like, he escaped and he has access to a lot of money.
Yeah.
He also had 3 fake IDs, a large plot of land in Oregon, a Chevy Blazer, and a yacht.
Sure.
So he was considered a low flight risk, but he ran and he had the means to keep running. Mm-hmm. But even when he was on the run, he was considered like low priority to recapture because he's just like a white collar criminal. He's not violent. Sure. He's not whatever. And they will soon learn to regret that decision. Fred, a.k.a. Ron, gets into the helicopter with a pilot named Pete Szabo, who was supposed to be like his guide on this tour to survey his land.
Okay.
Mid-flight, Ron takes out a handgun, points it at Szabo, and he makes Szabo land the helicopter in the middle of a remote hillside. And he says, give me your shoes and get out.
Why the shoes?
Interesting. So he won't like run off.
He takes Szabo's shoes, kicks him out of the helicopter. And about 10 minutes later, like he waits, I guess, for a little bit of time, and he flies off. So Szabo is left standing in the middle of this field, like, the fuck just happened?
Does he know how to fly?
He was in Vietnam.
Helicopter pilot. Okay.
He does know how to fly.
Sure.
So Sabo's standing in the middle of this field. He was like, what the fuck? It's in the middle of nowhere, but I'm just going to walk until I find someone. He starts walking, only to realize that the field that he was dropped in is covered in white bull thistle.
Oh.
Which is a wildflower with a lot of sharp spines.
Yeah, Ron knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah. No, he ain't no dummy.
Huh.
There's like spines, like these really sharp spines all over the flower, the stem, the leaves, like the entire plant is covered in it. So he has to like shuffle his way through these thistles. He makes it to the nearest house, which is a 40-minute walk away in these thistles.
I hate it.
He arrives and like knocks on the door, but like the homeowner just slams the door in his face because he's seeing this like sweaty man with like no shoes and bloody feet babbling on about a helicopter hijacking. He's like, what the fuck? And he just closes the door in his face.
Yeah.
As you would. This man seems crazy. We're going to skip over to Dorinda right now.
Okay.
She's standing in a field in her 45-minute time frame.
While Ron was hijacking the helicopter and Sabo was destroying his feet on the thistles, Dorinda's just sitting on the field in Pleasanton, as she was told to do every morning. Just sitting there in her sweatpants. And suddenly, in the distance, she sees a helicopter, which is nothing remarkable. Like, helicopters fly through here. There's airports in the area, whatever. But it gets closer and closer and lower until it's hovering just inches above the ground, and she realizes that it's Ron. Inmates cheered as Ron opened the door and he offers Dorinda a ride, and she's like, yes, you're driving.
This is outrageous.
And she jumps in, and they fly off into the sunset.
And there are no guards shooting at the helicopter.
Apparently not. And also, it's not sunset. It's 11:30 in the morning.
That's fine.
So they take the helicopter. They land in a field that is surrounded by like trees and bushes. And he has a truck waiting for them there. They drive to Sacramento, stopping at KFC on the way to pick up a bucket of 15-piece chicken.
I mean, priorities. As you do.
Yeah. He asked Dorinda, he's like, what do you want? She's like, KFC.
I would also feel a little snacky after these events.
Of course. I mean, you get an appetite when you're breaking out of prison.
Yes.
Ron, since his escape, had been renting an apartment from a friend in Sacramento. So they go to this apartment, they eat fried chicken, they take a bubble bath together, and they bang it out all over the apartment.
Good for them.
Which is allegedly the first time they fucked. Apparently they didn't fuck in prison.
Huh.
So supposedly this is like the first
time. Somebody ruined the kitchen ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
From then on, they lived in this apartment doing like normal couple-y things. They would go on drives. They would eat out. They drank their morning coffee, reading the newspaper together.
This is ridiculous. This is outrageous.
5 days after the escape, they found themselves at a jewelry store in the mall wearing wigs, and they were putting down deposits on wedding rings.
Get the fuck out of here.
That they engraved with TB and MLB for Teddy Bear and My Lady Bear.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. Go away. Nope.
Ron was like, hey, I have a yacht. We should take my yacht and go to South America. And Dorinda's like, no, like maybe I can reunite with my children somehow. I don't want to leave the country. Like a day or two later, they returned to pick up their rings that they had like put the deposit down on. Sure. And there were police officers and U.S. Marshals there waiting for them because I think Ron had like used a check or something. It was like,
yeah, they had to access really their money some way.
Like, right. So they were not smart about it. They got caught.
And this was how long after they had been?
I think they were like in that apartment for like 7 to 10 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because so it was really quick. It was really quick.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At trial, Ron's lawyer portrayed him as a Vietnam War veteran suffering from PTSD. And he also kind of portrayed him as like a simpleton.
I don't know about that.
You know, he's this overweight, bumbling idiot who just fell for this woman, essentially, you know?
I mean, he's not in Mensa, but he's also not.
Yeah, he's not
stupid.
Yeah. You know, they said he was used by his country and now he was used by this woman.
I mean, that's a great line, but I don't think it's necessarily true.
The media portrayed him as like the middle class guy, like Mr. Suburbanite, a love struck puppy under Dorinda's spell, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
His defense argued that Ron broke Dorinda out in order to save her from like the corrupt guards who were threatening her. So he was like saving his damsel in distress kind of thing. Like he had to do it. Or at least in Ron's mind, he had to do it. Mm-hmm. Ron's lawyer would not allow Ron on the stand because he was afraid that Ron would get questioned about other looming charges.
Well, yeah, and what if Ron is too articulate for that argument?
That too, yeah. But they're also just afraid, like, there's other things that people are still investigating on Ron. Like, we don't want to open him up to, like, question.
Open that door, yeah.
Dorinda, she claimed that she had no advanced knowledge of Ron's plan. But some, like, there are a lot of people who argued that point. So someone from the prison had been calling the same number that Ron had been calling the summer before his escape, which turned out to be the friend who was renting the apartment, like he rented the apartment from. So Ron rents an apartment from somebody. After Ron is gone, Okay. Someone from the prison in Dorinda's like cell block is making calls to that same number. So that's a little suspicious.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So she had his number. Right.
Logbooks show that there were points where she was like, this guard threatened me on this day. And like those guards weren't even working that day.
I mean, is she like, I don't know what day things happened in quarantine.
That's what I was thinking too.
I'm like, prison is kind of similar. Like, do they have
I believe
where they're
that.
Recording the days that things happen?
I don't know.
Like, every day is the same in this world that you're in.
It sounds like the way they wrote it in this article was like, maybe they had some kind of like complaint that she filed on a certain day or something. I don't know. That's my only guess. Otherwise, I'm like, yeah, your days blend together. Like,
yeah,
I can't tell you.
I don't hold that one against.
I think like, for the next few days, like if what day I said what thing, you know. So
I only know Kelly Giddish's birthday. Continue.
One of her little protege women, one of the women who called her mom, she was in prison because she had broken her boyfriend and two other men out of prison in South Carolina in 1985 by hijacking a helicopter. No further details on that story. I did not find that story, but apparently this happened a year before. And
so he's not even the OG. He's not even original. Right?
But people testified that Dorinda would say out loud, like, oh, that'd be so easy to do here in Pleasanton. Again, none of this is proof, but it certainly doesn't help her case. But they're both found guilty. Yeah. Ron and Dorinda are both found guilty. Before their sentencing, they get married in the courthouse.
They should have done that before so they couldn't testify against each other.
Dorinda's attorney was the witness. Dumb. Ron's attorney was the minister.
Oh, God. This is just gross.
They both got 5 years for escaping. Ron got an additional 20 years for air piracy.
Oh, so. I like that. I didn't know that was a thing.
I want to be an air pirate when I grow up.
I mean, it just means you're a plane
hijacker.
That's
amazing.
But he had 15 months left on his sentence when he escaped prison, and he was going to go to this like cushy, like unfenced work camp to do it. And now he's got an additional 25 years in an actual prison instead.
Yeah, that's not worth it. That's not
like,
worth it.
Jesus.
That's a terrible trade.
Right? But wait, there's more.
Okay.
So after he was sent back to prison, Ron was charged with a murder from 1983.
Oh.
So back when Ron and his prison friend Anthony, they were the two that did the precious metal scheme together.
Sure.
So when they first got started, they needed money to get things off the ground, and they borrowed it from another con artist named Ronald Ewing. When they didn't pay Ewing back in time, Ewing was threatening to expose their scam, so they hired a hitman to Houdini him. Houdini-ing means...
Ooh, to disappear them?
To make someone disappear. Yeah.
Decapitate them and burn the body beyond recognition.
Oh.
Apparently.
That is not what I thought.
Yeah. I thought it was just disappearing, but I'm wrong.
But the hitman, he must have been new. He must have been like coming in second, as Dorinda would say. He was coming in second because he shot the man once, panicked, and ran away. So instead of doing the whole decapitation burning thing, he just like shot a gun and was like, oh my God, and just like ran, hightailed it out of
there. It's his first day.
It's his first day. So
we all got to start somewhere.
I guess that left enough as evidence that they were able to like somehow implicate Ron and Anthony. And
that's
were,
a
like,
really bad first day.
Mm-hmm. Ron got questioned at the time, but like at the time they didn't have enough evidence to charge him. But now that now we're a couple years later and they do have evidence.
Yeah, they've built a case of some kind.
But while he was in prison at Pleasanton with Dorinda, he knew he was under investigation for murder.
Okay.
So he may have asked for the transfer to the work camp because he knew it would be a chance of escape.
Okay.
And his like anxiety and getting the Ativan and all that may have actually been about like his own situation, not Dorinda's.
Hmm.
So like he was conning her right back, it seems like.
he's not as dumb as he seems.
Right? Right? Teddy Bear's not too dumb.
Teddy Bear and the Thistles.
Yeah. Dorinda's like, I never believed that he was guilty of this. Like, he wouldn't do that.
I mean, he's already in fucking prison.
I know, right?
Like,
it does seem very 70s of just like, fall in love, don't ask questions.
Yeah, right?
Our past.
One of my first questions to Craig on our first Bumble date was like, so you're not like wanted for murder, right? Like,
no, just some basic white
standard first date questions.
I mean, yeah, you, well, he also gave me his first and last name, quote, for Googling purposes, end quote.
I mean,
before we got there, so that I could make sure he was not a murderer by checking, like police reports.
Well, that's good. That's nice of him. It's responsible.
I thought so.
Then now they're in different prisons. Because they're married, they're allowed to write letters to each other and make calls to each other.
Okay.
During one of these calls, Ron proposed, like, hey, why don't we try to escape again? He had this elaborate plan involving, like, commandeering a deputy sheriff's car and kidnapping a state judge. And Dorinda's like, nah, I'm just going to, like, serve this sentence and get out of here.
God damn it, Ron.
Gonna do this the traditional way.
I'm tired of that life. In 1990, Ron was eventually found guilty of the murder charges, too. And they kind of lost touch after that. Dorinda did her time in Florida. And eventually she was reunited with her old friend, Shelley, who was recaptured and brought to Florida.
Oh.
They became like besties in prison.
Oh, that's a happy ending.
After a little bit of time, she and Ron would start writing love notes to each other, like through this private investigator somehow. He was like passing notes between them.
Okay.
In 2010, Dorinda was paroled from prison as a compassionate release because her health was kind of failing.
Okay, so she's in Florida. Where is he?
I don't remember. I didn't write it down. Okay. Not Florida. They're not in a co-ed prison. They're kind of, they're separated.
I mean,
point.
I assumed they were separated, but I didn't know if they were like in the same state.
I don't remember where I didn't write it down. I don't know.
Okay.
He's farther away. I think they're like states away.
Okay.
Time zones away, potentially. But yeah, so she's let out on a compassionate release because her health is failing and she's old.
Okay.
She's moved to a assisted living facility in Arizona because she's kind of like lost touch with any family and her, you know, her children and everything.
Okay.
She gets a cat who she names Abby.
Oh.
And again started exchanging notes with Ron through this private investigator in 2020 during COVID lockdown, because that's what happened in 2020. People started reaching out to their exes being like,
hey, it wasn't that bad, was it?
But at this point, I think they have lost touch again. I think
is she still alive?
I believe she's still alive. Yes, because all of my information is based off of an article from Esquire, someone who interviewed Dorinda during COVID lockdown about all of this stuff.
Okay,
so she's released. She's in a assisted living facility with her cat, and
Abby,
Ron's
Abby
in prison,
and Dorinda,
and that is the love tale of Ron and Dorinda.
If you're interested in more about how to escape from prison in a helicopter, we probably won't have another episode, but you should still listen to Harpy Hour.
I've done two
iTunes
prison escape episodes back to back now. So.
Yeah, that's true. But they didn't both involve helicopters.
No, one involved a tunnel and a motorcycle.
Yeah, that was pretty legit. Anyway,
you have
can
those
listen
resources
to Harpy Hour on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave us a stellar review.
You can also email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Harpy Hour Pod.
And we are also on Patreon. If you have any extra money lying around, you know, from your
white collar
criminal days.
Yes, yes.
If you have $18 million lying around and don't know what to do with it, we'll help you out. Donate
Become
to us
a patron.
To help keep us on the air. So, thanks for listening. Okay,
bye.
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 And we're done.
Yeah.